Hello and welcome to another episode of Chris and Adam's 60 Minute Speedrun, the show that goes by the old saying that time flies when you're having fun. I'm Chris and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely friend. It's Mr. Adam Parry. Hello.
Yar, gym lad, etc., pirates and gold pieces of eight, grog, peg legs, ladies.
Oh, I'm guessing that you've been playing a pirate-related game, not Monkey Island.
No, pirates.
No?
No.
Well, you went, straight into it. I was going to ask you how you are, but we haven't really got time. But anyway, I'll ask, how are you?
Fine. Are you?
Oh, good. Yes, good. Looking forward to doing this, this again, as always. So anyway, yes. No time for chaff.
Get on with it.
What's this piratey bullshit that you're on about?
Well, it's kind of sea-based. And okay. I can't really do an impression of a fish or a wave or flotsam or seaweed or shells or bubbles.
I've got a good joke.
Go on. Oh no.
Why did the sea blush?
Because the seaweed. Yeah. It doesn't make it. Why did the sea blush? Shouldn't it be something else?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, why did the crab blush? I don't know.
The simplest joke in the world, and you got it wrong.
Fucked it up. Anyway, go on. Carry on.
What?
You were saying you've been playing a sea related game.
Yeah, I have.
What? Tell us fucking hell.
You didn't say I was starting off. You just say, so what have we been playing? And I go, well, I've been playing. And then you say, well, I've been playing. And then we carry on like that.
Well, okay. What have you been playing? Christ, I'm going to drag it out of you. That's 10 seconds wasted. Come on.
I know. Yep, well, we've got loads of time. The first game I will discuss. It feels like a lifetime ago. I played Dredge. I can't remember if I mentioned it last time. Or was that off-air?
You didn't. You did say that you hadn't had enough time to talk about a specific game. But
that could be why it feels like a long time ago, because I probably finished it. Yeah, I'd finished it actually last time we recorded. So yes, I downloaded and played the game Dredge, which is a game about fishing. But it's not all that it seems. So what would I describe Dredge as? It's a fishing game. Top down boaty fishing game where you play the boat, you don't play the character, really. So yes, you are at the start of the game, you are a captain again. You don't actually play directly as the captain, who answers a advert to be a fisherman for a small island, and he crashes on a rock, which is always a good start if you're going for a new job as a fisherman. Crashing, yay! So he gets taken on as a fisherman. The mayor of the island lends you a boat to go out with. And you go out and you fish. So you have like a little, what do you call it? Like a bay between the island where you start off and there's I think it's called Marrow. I could be wrong, but there's a little Marrow opposite. So you like in this circle of water and you chug along in your little boat. And if you see like little shadows of fishy-wishies, fish, that's what they're called. See little shadows of fish, and it starts a little fishing mini game to catch them. And you catch them, and you get like remember the Resident Evil 4 management system of items?
Yeah.
Or item management, as it's known. Fucking
there was a game which I can't remember, but I will find out, which was pretty much exactly that.
Wasn't it called something box?
I'm going to find out. You carry on. Go on.
And the fish come in various shapes and sizes. And the idea is that you fill your hold full of fish and you manipulate the shapes in the best way possible to get maximum amount of fishage, which I'm going to use as a word. Take it back to the island.
Fishage? Fuck me.
Take him to the fishmonger, who is a character who you meet, and he gives you money. And through money and things, you upgrade your boat. So the types of rods and reels that you use, because they can fish at different depths, because not all fish are available initially, because your rod might not be a deep water rod, it might only be a coastal rod, so you have to buy different rods, put those in your inventory slots, which all within your cargo hold, including your light and your engines as well, which you can upgrade as you go through the game. Different rods for different depths. Dredge. Eventually, you get nets out the back to dredge things, which would be, you know, kind of you'd expect it since it's called dredge. And you find resources like wood and metal and cotton, so you can upgrade bits of your boat. But the main thing is that at night, things get a little bit freaky. So when you go out at night, you've got in the UI, you've got an eye, which represents how much you're panicking. And at night, you start to panic more because you can't see very far because fog rolls in. And you've only got a pissy little light at the front of your boat, which you can upgrade to give you a bit more. But to be fair, even when you upgrade it all the way up to top, doesn't provide you with much. But you start seeing things. So you'll be putting along in the ocean and a rock might appear out of nowhere. And that's because the rock isn't there normally, but now it is. And as you turn off the screen, the rock disappears. And then you start seeing weird things like other boats in the distance that might be apparently giant fish that come in and attack you. You might get floating eyes or clouds of weird red mist that make you panic more. And it all goes a bit weird. But the whole point of this is at night, where you've got the little fishy, wishy, swirly, swirly bits, the way you do the fishing, there might be a strange, like, green gas above where you're fishing. And there's a chance then if you go down and fish there, you'll get an aberration, which is a version of the fish that you catch normally that's a bit fucked up. So you might get a mackerel that's made out of eyeballs or a squid that's got some pulsating, glowing sack that seems to be leaking everywhere. And every fish in the game's got at least one aberration to catch. They're worth more money. Sometimes they're a bit harder to catch. But the idea is you putter around going, oh, I'll have this. You meet some of the characters on the island. Because when you go back to your port, you get like a static screen. You can go to the fishmonger, the dock, the place where they fix stuff. I can't remember what it's called. That might be the dock. There's a dock and a workyard, I think. You can speak to the mayor. You can speak to the lighthouse. Because there's a lighthouse on the main island, which is your reference point, basically, for the entire map. Because you could always see the lighthouse light. So if you head towards that, you know where you're going. But you start dredging and catching weird things, and a little fella becomes available on an island, and he gives you a task that he's after some items of special acquisition. So you complete the little side task for him, and you get some side tasks off other people on the other islands. Like, oh, I've lost a ring. I lost it near this wreck. So you dredge near the wreck, you get a ring, and they give you something back. Or you have to deliver a package or do stuff. But every time you give him one of his special items, he gives you a special power. So that could be, God, my memory's bad. What could your special powers be, Adam? If I was a special power on a boat, what would I be? I would be...
Faster engine?
No.
Oh, catch fish quicker?
You can. You do get a turbo boost, but the more you boost, the more you panic.
Oh.
So it's sort of a bit of a balancing act.
What every happens time if you get panic one of his... too much?
So if you panic too much, to be honest, not much. You got more chance of, I think, more things happen. But it's a neat idea, but I don't think it quite fulfills it because you never really, once you realise, oh, right, that's the limit of what's going to happen. So you might see a giant kraken tentacle or something that might attack you. You might get attacked, but you can usually skedaddle out of the way easily enough. I think I played through the whole game. I don't think I actually sort of died once, which was... Actually, no, I don't think I died. No. Huh. Who would have thunk it? And you don't really die. I think you'd go back to port or do reload your last save. But every time you give him one of his special things, he gives you a power and it opens up another set of islands across the ocean. And there's, I think it's 5 areas. You're free to go wherever you want once they're open. Because to be fair, if you go to some of the other, try and go to some of the other places early, you're in trouble because your boat's not really good enough. For one, it won't travel fast enough because some of them are quite a distance. You've only got slow engines and you try to reach the furthest island, you probably would get twatted by some panic-inducing monster that would happen.
Mm.
But you know, if you play it as the game wants you to, go here, do some side missions, go there. It's kind of like a... So it's the main story element to each block of islands, like a little mini plot within the bigger plot. where people ask you to do things and you sort of do whatever you need to do around the island. You get your special thing, you go back to Matey. He gives you another weird power from this book, this weird book that he's got, like a magic book. And the whole it carries on like that. And eventually, I mean, I guess the plot, the actual overarching plot of why weird things were happening in that pretty early, because you can find messages in bottles and whatnot. It gives you a bit of background to things that have happened. But I just found it quite fun to play, to be honest. It was perfect for Portal, if you want to put it that way. It's quite an easy game to play on the PlayStation Portal, and it was nice to, you know, have a poo and play that for 10 minutes, because you can just do 10 minutes on it, do a couple of runs out, get a load of fish, get a bit of cash, you know, towards upgrading your boat, and put it away, crack on again. So a nice pick-up-and-play game, I think.
There's some DLC called The Pale Reach. Are you tempted to get that?
I don't think I've got that. No, I didn't get that. I think that's it. That was in the deluxe version. I thought no, because I think the normal version was on sale. Probably not. I don't think. I'm not really.
Does
one
it
for
fulfill?
DLC.
Does the story fulfill you? Do you feel like is it, or is it just a case of you keep going? Getting resources, etc.
My boat was pretty much as hardcore as a fishing boat can be at the end. I'd got all the best stuff.
Was it pimp my boat?
Yeah, there's an almanac of fish, so you can see if you've missed any, because certain fish only come out at night, certain fish in the morning, because it's a day-night cycle, but it's bloody quick, to be fair. So you've got to be in the right place at the right time to catch certain fish. I can't remember how many types there is, probably a good 100 or so. I think I was maybe four or five that I'd missed by the end of it, and it was mainly some of the rarer aberrations. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called. But once I was done, and I was pretty thorough when I played it, but I wasn't going for a completionist, but I think I got pretty close. But by the time the credits rolled, there's two different endings, a in air commas good and a bad ending. So I got one, and I just went back and replayed the last bit just to get the other ending. So, like, the branch between the two endings is right at the end of the game. You haven't got to replay anything, so you're not missing out.
I've heard good things about this. I mean, you're the second or third person that I've heard say good things about this. I think Pete said he enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Dave actually wrote a review. I'll read his last paragraph. He says, this is a game, because it mirrors pretty much what you've just said. This is a game that you can hop into if you have just 10 minutes free and you can catch a few fish for some more cash or visit a new island or complete a request from an islander. Though do be warned that this game has the habit of getting its hooks into you, and those 10 minutes can easily turn into a few hours. Highly recommended. So that was what Dave thought about it. So, yeah, I've heard good things.
It's quite peaceful in some respects, to be fair. Despite the whole thing supposed to be panicky. But like I said, it's apart from the kind of thing that can attack you, which only really depends on your map location. It's quite, you know, in the same, what was that game on the GameCube?
Eternal Darkness.
Yeah, kind of like that. Like, the first few times that things happen in that game, it was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But then as soon as you've seen them and you realise that that's what the game doing, it kind of loses its... there's no fear behind it. So I was just... Yeah, I mean, and then most of the time, I just, towards the end of the game, I didn't give a fuck if I was out at night or during the day. I had a really quick boat and I had good nets and good rods, so I just steamed through as much as I possibly could, to be fair. But if you stay up too long, because you're supposed to sleep and rest every now and then, if you don't do that, I think the mayor comes out and says you need to get some sleep, and it might force you to, because you get a bit of digital foundry speak. You get a bit of chromatic aberration around the edges of the screen when you're really knackered.
Well, there you go. A couple of things. I've heard you've got a good rod, a nice firm rod. Mm-hmm. With a bit of bend in it occasionally.
Yeah, a little bit of bend. It has a good cast. I'll give it that.
Yes. And then the other thing was, you might think, well, did I just read your mind? Funnily enough, talking about sanity effects and things like that, you know, eternal darkness. But when you were describing the game, that's my mind drifted to that because of the nature of sort of the things that you were talking about in how things appear that weren't there, that look a bit sort of otherworldly and Lovecraftian, all that kind of stuff.
Yes. The Lovecraftian is very much a description of things that seem to be happening. It's a
yes. Below the surface, all yes. that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Very good. I like it. And also, just to finish off, the game that we were describing, a lovely little game. It's only £4. You can probably get it on sale at some point. It's called Save Room, and that's based upon the Resident Evil 4 case where you manage your equipment. And it only takes about an hour to finish it, but it's £4. You can't buy a pint for that.
There's only so much you can. There's only so much you can do with it, really, isn't it? But weird that just playing Tetris with items is quite good. I get really annoyed playing Dredge, and I think, shit, there's no way I can actually. I'm going to have one square free of my cargo here, and I'm sitting there trying to figure out. Well, if I ditch the mackerel and I ditch that, then I might be able to fit one of them in instead. And I was thinking, stop being a bell end. It's one frigging square.
Yeah,
doesn't matter. You'll have your money.
The more recent Resident Evil games, since they did that, they all do it now. You know, yeah. all the modern Resident Evil games, you have a case you can put your stuff in. But they do that cardinal sin where you can auto arrange, which is good in some ways because it saves a bit of time, but it's also bullshit because that was part of the game. You know, but
yeah.
Anyway,
I like organising my inventory.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want it to auto-do it because I want to decide which portion of my inventory is where my health things are and which portion is where my ammo is. That's up to me. It's not up to AI to do it. I'm human still-ish.
Just about. Yeah. Well, very good. Well, talking about Resident Evil, I'll mention these because, as I mentioned before, I think I didn't talk about them in any detail because we didn't have time, but I'm playing through the Resident Evil games again. I have to say it's possibly my favourite franchise of all franchises. It's the games I've played more than once on multiple occasions through different systems on the PlayStation, the GameCube, the PlayStation 3, the PlayStation 4, 5, whenever they've done remakes or remasters. I've gone back and I've played those games. And I like that they're like a nice comfort blanket for me. I like the way that the series has evolved from the static backgrounds, you know, the sort of camp dialogue, the zombies and everything else. I'm talking about the main games, not necessarily the sort of like the spin-off type ones where you have a light gun or,
I think the numbered ones, apart from Resident Evil, which wasn't called Resident Evil 1.
Yes, so I'm doing them in chronological order for the first time, which sounds very pretentious and wanky.
Do you mean chronological in the way they were released or chronological in the story's timeline?
In the stories, based on the story timeline. So starting off with Resident Evil 0, which was actually released in 2002 on the GameCube. Ironically, the same year as the remake of Resident Evil was released on the GameCube as well. But I've played this through before. I'm sure I played it through on the PlayStation 4, and I've played so. But like I said, I wanted to start it again. With games like this, another game, if we get a chance to talk about it, I've actually just finished Metal Gear Solid. From the new collection that's just come out. Ooh, but because crikey. You've played them before, you have a general idea of what you're doing. So you don't have to waste time as such. You know, you can kind of go through and just kind of enjoy the game and you know what's coming, but at the same time, it's enjoying it for what it is. So, but have you played Resident Evil 0?
Yeah, I played it on the GameCube when it came out. I remember not liking it as much as the remake. Is it the one where do you have two characters on a train and you just kind of swap between the two of them?
That's right, yeah. So you start off with Rebecca, who is a character you meet in Resident Evil. She's the medic. And then there's another character called Billy, who's a former soldier stroke convict now. And he's portrayed as the bad guy by certain people. But, you know, you end up working together and, you know, shit kicks off. You fight slug things and whatever. It's the first one where because like Resident Evil at that point, if you I suppose imagine this was, I suppose, the last traditional Resident Evil with those fixed cameras, because in 2005 you got Resident Evil 4 and that changed everything at that point, didn't it? You know, it just kind of, Resident Evil's never been the same since then, really, I suppose. This introduced the element of you've got two characters and you can switch between the two at any point in the game, as long as, you know, something's happening where you're both involved. So and I always loved about the GameCube that I love those fixed backgrounds. I think they look so impressive. And I even now, because I think it's a remaster, it's not a remake, it's a remaster of the original GameCube. But I still think they look so detailed and they look lovely. And I've got a real soft spot for playing like the original Resident Evil games for that reason. You know, I think they look lovely. So they've got different abilities. They introduced that as well. So because she's a medic, she can mix herbs, whereas Billy can't. Billy's obviously bigger, stronger, so he can move things. He's got a lighter, so he can light things. And you can switch items between each other as long as you are close to each other. The other thing that they introduce is, or get rid of to a certain degree, is you've still got the lock boxes where you can put items in to store them, because you've only got a limited inventory. Because again, this was before you had a case that you could put stuff in. So you have, let's say, 6 spots in your inventory, or 8 spots, whatever it is. So, and also, they fuck you a little bit in these, because things like a shotgun or a machine gun or something that takes, it's quite big, takes up 2 spots in your inventory, which is a fucker. Yeah, you can swap items. Overall, I enjoyed it. Going back to it, it was that opening section on the train is fantastic, and then after that, it turns into more of a traditional Resident Evil game where you go to a mansion and then you're doing the Resident Evil type stuff, you know, and whatever. And
is there an underground laboratory?
That's right. There's an
who would have thunk it.
Yeah, there's the ground lab. There's, like I said, there's the sort of like the Spencer Mansion type place, but just not as big. There's more different type of monsters, because I've actually gone back and I've completed Resident Evil Remake as well, so I'll briefly touch on that. But there's more types of monsters. So you can tell that they were experimenting with different things and different ideas at the time, but they hadn't quite moved on that sort of leap to what Resident Evil 4 became. But I think a lot of the time I hear things, this isn't very well regarded, but you said yourself that, you know, you perhaps don't remember enjoying it particularly, but it is fun. But you can see why they went in a different direction with the games, because I think if they'd carried on down this route, it was potentially going to be stale. So the other thing as well is, you can actually drop items on the floor and it will tell you where they are on the map and it will show you what they are on the map. So
which is actually useful.
Yeah, because I enjoyed Resident Evil generally. Resident Evil Zero, it was fun to go back to.
Sorry to butt in. When you're on the train, do you have to send stuff up and down on is it a dumbwaiter?
A dumbwaiter, yeah. So there's different parts in that.
Yeah. As you said, like, Billy's got a lighter.
Yes.
You think he'd lend it to Rebecca, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, I need help. I need a lighter. I'm fucking having my lighter, mate. Jesus.
Yeah. That's one of the frustrating elements of the game, in as much as that. So there are points where you are split up, and there are points where, because again, like I said, you can swap weapons and items between each other. But if you are, if there's an, and also you've still got the traditional typewriter saves. But if you are split up and one of you's got lots of weapons or got some of the more powerful weapons and the other one hasn't, and the other one's about to fight a boss, you're kind of fucked, really. And and that's one of the frustrating elements of the game. So then you have to go back to your saves. And that happened to me a few times. And I like it, but it's, I understand the sort of like the shortcomings of it. So Resident Evil Zero, sorry, not Resident Evil, Resident Evil Remake. I've gone through that. I've finished that. And that, again, I don't need to talk about Resident Evil. It's the remake version or remaster. You know, actually it was the remake, wasn't it? So
The remastered remake.
Yeah. And it's So Resident Evil 2, when that came out, that was like a massive leap, you know, in terms of, because it came on two discs and, you know, it was just a bigger story. And I remember following a guide trying to finish it in under 3 hours so I could get hunk.
so not for the first time.
Yes. And tofu and whatever. But what I've noticed about Resident Evil, and I've chose to play through it with Chris this time, and I've played through it with both of them in the past, but last time I played it, I played through it with Jill. Now, Jill's got two extra spots in her inventory. She can carry 8 items, whereas Chris can only carry 6.
Yeah, it makes sense, because you'd think, you know, Chris is a man, so he can carry more.
Yeah, well, and also, so I don't know if it's because, you know, she's got a bag or something, or a handbag.
Well, handbag.
I don't know. But anyway, so, and I love Resident Evil. I genuinely do. I like the music about it and everything else. And it's a shame it hasn't got that FMV video that was banned at the time. I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was amazing. I love the remake. When I first saw it, the graphics were like, fucking hell. But yeah, there is something about, there's something about the cheese of the original that was sort of missing, which I did kind of miss from it, because the original, the intro's outstanding.
Yeah.
It just is.
You're right. And so what I found, though, I still enjoyed playing it, but I don't know if this will be the last time I think I will play the now there's news of a remake of the remake, if you like, because they've been remaking the Resident Evil
games. Of the it'd be a remake of the remaster of the remake of the original.
Yes, because I'm sure they released another version of Resident Evil, which they made even harder on the PlayStation. But anyway, so. But what I've noticed about this is that, like I said, because I've only got 6 inventory spots. So if you imagine, I've got to carry a pistol, I've got to carry a herb, I've got to carry... In the remake, they add... So the zombies, that they, unless you burn them, they come back as the...
Yeah, the crimson-headed zombie things.
That's right. And they're more vicious, they do more damage. So you have to carry some kerosene. You don't have to, but, you know, carry some kerosene with you.
Yeah, but you can't burn them all, though, can you? So you're always going to end up with at least one of them bastards running around.
Yeah, and then you've got to carry items. And then so I spent probably an hour and a half one evening, because it doesn't tell you what's in a room. It just tells you that there's an item in a room, because it shows up as red on the map as opposed to blue or whatever. So I spent an hour and a half just literally running around all the red rooms that I'd opened up and getting the items that I could pick up, putting them in a case, in a save box, and then going around doing that for an hour and a half. Just so at least I'd got everything in one place as opposed to dotted around here.
Doing a bit of tidy housework first.
Exactly, yeah. And the other thing as well is that until the game introduces the hunters and some of the more different monsters later on, which is quite late on in the game, I'm not saying it's boring, but there isn't a lot going on. Once there's a few zombies dotted around, but like I said, if you set fire to them, then there's nothing really. So you and the other thing as well is, and I know it's a traditional gameplay trope, but it makes you go from one end of the house to the other end of the house, and then all the way back to the other end of the house, and then all the other way back to the other end of the house, and then once it starts to introduce the underground base, then you got to go to that, then you got to find a crank to get rid of the water, then you got to find a battery for the lifts, and then you got to go back here, and by the end of it, I'm glad it was done. I was kind of getting a bit fed up of it because of that aspect of it. It is a very, and I hadn't really noticed it too much, it's a very fetch and carry with very else little going on kind of game.
Oh, I still love it. It's completely illogical, isn't it? I mean, it does make no sense, because it means the house was left in that state for someone to go in. So if you worked in the laboratory and something was happening with the tyrant and you could only get in the front of the mansion, think of the fucking hoops you've got to jump through just to get down to the laboratory. Because you're going to have to go and solve a puzzle to go and get a club key, to get a spade key, to get a diamond key, heart key. It's like, oh, fuck me, I've just left my sandwiches in my locker. That's all I want, is go and get my sandwiches. I'm hungry. and you've got to run around the house for 2 hours getting keys and solving picture puzzles just so you can go into the staff room of the laboratory, pick up your sandwiches.
Yeah. So what I'm doing is I'm playing a Resident Evil game, then I'm playing something else, and then I'm playing a Resident Evil game. So I'm kind of breaking them up. So yeah, next up is Resident Evil 2, which is the remake, which I have played, but I haven't played it since it came out in whenever it was, 2019, I'm guessing. But so I'm looking forward to going back, because that was a proper full-on remake. Did you play that at all?
I did, yeah. But isn't 3 slightly before it? Or is 3, doesn't part of 3 happen before 2? And then part of 3 happen after 2?
No, I think 3 kind of...
Because it's at the same time, isn't it? But it's when Raccoon City falls. I just didn't know if it was slightly before the start of Resident Evil 2.
I think you're right, actually. Because looking at this thing on IGN, it does say that the chronology is a bit dicey with 3, because it says the first part of 3 takes place before the events of Resident Evil 2, but the second part takes place after. So it says you could play halfway through, pause it, then play 2, then go back to the second half of 3.
Yeah. If you're doing it properly, just saying.
Oh, well, there you go. So, yeah. Back to you, anyway. We've got half an hour left.
Oh, cool. Obviously, I had not had enough of fishing-style shenanigans.
Yes.
So I downloaded Dave the Diver that turned up on PlayStation Plus last month. Thinking, cool, I'm in a kind of underwater kind of mood. Don't know what that means, but I'm in an underwater mood, so I'll play another little underwater game. Yay. It was a fucking long game.
Yeah, I noticed you've been playing this as long as you've been playing bloody Power Wash Simulator.
I know. Well, no, not quite. Come on, let's be realistic. But it's take... I mean, all right, I had a look, because about 3/4 of the way through, I thought, oh, how long does it take to beat this fucking game? Because I seem to have been going for a while. Apparently, you can do it in about 25 hours. I think it took me 45, but then that's just because of my particular play style, which is stupid. And I completed it this morning, weirdly enough.
So congratulations. I'm actually
done with... Well, I was almost done with it, but we'll get to that. So, Dave the Diver, you play the titular Dave, unsurprisingly, who has been requested to help a man run a sushi bar. A bloke called Bancho? I think it's I'm terrible with names. I've been playing this game for 45 hours, and I can't remember names apart from Dave. Anyhow.
You can't go wrong with Dave, can you?
No, you can't.
Hello to Dave when he listens to this.
So, so you play Dave Le Daver, and you are helping a friend open up or reopen and fix a sushi restaurant that they have that was damaged. A bloke called Cobra, which is a really weird name for a fella, but never mind. So have a gameplay loop of the day is split into 3 sections, morning, afternoon and night. You go diving, or you don't have to, eventually. But you go diving in the morning and the afternoon. And so it's sort of like a 2D pixely-ish type thing. Although probably polygons, but meh. Kind of, you know, old semi-retro looking game. You have a harpoon, not necessarily a rifle. And it's kind of like a roguelike game, because the premise of it is that it takes place in a thing called the Blue Hole. And the blue hole constantly changes. Well, it doesn't constantly change. There's about 4 or 5 different map layouts. And you dive around, you catch fish, and you've got a limit of how much you can carry. You start off with crap harpoon and a crap gun. And you catch fish, take them back to the boat, send them to the restaurant. Matey cook sushi. You make money at night because you end up helping serve as well. That's kind of the really basic gameplay loop. But it gets quite complicated because obviously there's lots of resources involved. Yay. To upgrade all of your scuba equipment. So your oxygen tank represents essentially a life bar. So that drains as you are swimming around because you run out of oxygen. But if you get hit by something nasty or poisonous, it knocks a chunk off. Your harpoon can be upgraded to various types with elements and stuff as well. Your gun is very similar. The amount you can carry can change. Your knife can be upgraded because you use your knife to cut seaweed and hit rocks to get stuff. But you start off the game and say, like, after the first couple of hours, you've got like your first main task is to catch a shark because it's a really difficult one to describe. Right, that's your diving bit. Your restaurant bit, turns out you're running the restaurant. So you start off with just you and the fella who's the cook. And you have to make the menu from the fish that you've caught. So he can... So he, like, at first it's like bog standard sushi, like, so it might be yellow tang sushi, so it's a bit of fish. That's all it is. And that's all you sell. That gets more complicated with the more fish, because you can create better dishes. You can teach the chef new dishes, or he can learn new dishes, which are worth more money. Basically, the whole restaurant thing ends up being like a full restaurant management simulator, where you, you hire staff, you sort of have to pay them wages, you train them to be better. Because at the end of the day, Dave's quite a fat, useless bloke. So when he's pegging backwards and forwards across the restaurant, you move very, very slowly. You're better off employing people who can run quickly, serve food better. You employ more chefs to prepare things quicker. And all you really need to do is, at the start, try and serve the green tea to the customers who want green tea, because that's like a little mini game that takes longer to serve food. So you want to try and get in there and do that while people run around serving food. You've got to keep the wasabi topped up, because if you run out of wasabi, you can't cook any of the proper dishes, and you go to like your standard California roll type things that are worth no money. Don't want that. No sorry, Bob. So you've got all of that in the background. All of your fishing, which can... At the start, like, because you can only carry a little bit, a dive can take about 5-10 minutes. And then you have to go pop up again. You go back down in the afternoon, 5 or 10 minutes, pop up again. That can lengthen considerably when you've got bigger oxygen tanks, you've got better weapons, and you're just better at the game. You can stay underwater for a good hour in real time collecting stuff. Because there's multiple regions. The more you sort your energy tank out, or the better you make your suit as well, means you can dive deeper. And you dive deeper, you get better fish. And then eventually you go to the depths of the ocean where there's things. And there's also a plot in the background, which I won't spoil, but there's a plot involving stuff, which is really not much of a descriptor. But about 15, 16 hours into the game, I was like, oh, fuck, it's almost turned into like a Zelda-esque RPG. Why is this happening? And it does, and it keeps expanding. So you have loads more characters, areas to discover. You can open another branch of your sushi restaurant to employ people there and run it. You can have a fish farm where you can, when you catch fish, you get a fish roe, and then you can cultivate fish in the fish farm, which means you don't necessarily have to go diving for as long, because you can... As long as you maintain the fish farm properly, you've got a steady supply of fish for your kitchens. You then have a fucking farm as well, which is like a little mini version of friggin' Stardew Valley, where you grow vegetables and rice and raise chickens. But then you can hire someone to help run that for you, because every morning you can spend 20... If you've got a good fish farm, you spend 20 minutes, if you want to, micromanaging the amount of fish in each fucking portion, because if there's too many of them, they won't breed. So you want to decide which ones you want to breed, because you want to compare it to the menu items that are worth a decent amount of money. So you don't really want to grow fish which is selling for no good coin. You want to cultivate the fish that are worth a lot of money, depending on how you've enhanced the dish within the restaurant, because you can enhance the dish. Each dish has 10 levels. So you use resources to enhance it, which improves its taste and its flavour. And you need to improve its taste because you've got a mobile phone in the game, which is where you upgrade your weapons, where you catalogue all the fish that you bought, what quality of fish they are, because depending on how you kill them, depends if they're 1, 2, or 3 stars. There's a scientific research app where you can collect stuff and get rewards for that, almost like a weird mini score game. You deliver things to them and they'll give you points in return, and you get like charms and that to wear that can improve your stats underwater. What's the one I was mentioning in there that actually had the point? Diddly diddly do. Can't remember, but that's where you upgrade your weapons and everything as well. Fuck, what was I saying? What was I saying, Christopher?
I don't know, it sounds like a lot of shit you got to manage.
It's way more shit than I thought it was. After about 2 hours, I was thinking, oh, this is one of those nice relaxing games that I'll be done in about 5 hours. This is cool, I'm liking this. And then it just keeps adding stuff on. And after 35 hours, I was like, I could have done with this being a little bit smaller. Because there are plots with the chef, there's plots with the owner, there's plots with some of the other characters, because you get VIPs who come to the sushi bar who ask for specific dishes. And like earlier in the game, someone asked for something. Eventually, when you manage to catch the fish you need to make the dish for her, she eats it, falls in love with it, then becomes your accountant. And then you get a TV crew who come in and you have challenges with other chefs. So it's like chef versus chef, because there's many a mini game in this. There's a cooking mini game when you're doing chef versus chef. There's a stealth mini game like Metal Gear Solid, obviously. There's a bit that's like Brother Tale of Two Sons near the end. There's one where you got to follow a cat. There's quite a few weird things in this game. There's a lot of stuff in it. It is very enjoyable, but I think possibly a wee bit too long. But I finished it this morning, saw the credits roll, and then came, went to work, and I was just browsing thing, and it said, the Godzilla DLC for Dave the Divers available. And I was like, rewind. Sorry, that was the thing that was I found quite bizarre. Played Dredge, played this. It turned out there's free DLC that's a crossover between Dredge and Dave the Diver. So that was a weird thing that I didn't know about. So on misty nights, you end up doing night diving as well, where fish are more angry and there's other fish that aren't available during the day. When red mist comes rolling in, you dive down and you've got to catch the aberrated versions of fishes from Dredge in Dave the Diver to serve mysterious robed figures at your restaurant at night. And then someone buys the rest of the fish off you at the end of the night, who's a character from Dredge, because you can't sell normal people those fish because they won't eat them because they're fucked. So that was a weird Dredge crossover. Because the camera also changes to like Dredge during the Dredge bits. So you've got a top-down view of the boat and you actually physically go to areas and you do a bit of dredging and then you do a bit of fishing in certain areas. But you actually go down into the ocean rather than doing it from the surface. So that was a weird crossover. That was quite nice. But there was a Godzilla crossover that got released. And I noticed that today. And I thought, fuck me, I thought I'd finish with this. So I started that earlier on tonight. I was like, oh God, please don't be long. Please don't be long. But I've got to complete it. But please don't be long. About 45 minutes worth. I was quite happy.
Oh, that's good then. Yes. That's not a bad little thing, is it? So
three missions. And it was like, oh, that's done. Excellent. Now I'm done with it, I think.
Fantastic, but enjoyable, a bit long, enjoyable.
I put over 40 hours into it, so yes, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Not bad for a free game, is it, really?
No, but I got stuck in that thing. Why it took me that long is I started doing that thing with money in my head. I know I'm not going to need it, but I'm refusing to go below 10,000 coins. And then I get 50,000. It's like, I'm going below 25,000 coins. I could have upgraded everything so much quicker if I wasn't intent on saving
cheap
currency.
Yes.
Like I was going to retire on it. Madness.
Just very quickly before I move on then, because I've noticed there's a couple of games that you mentioned a few shows ago, but you haven't mentioned them since.
Okay.
So one of the, you have to go into a detail, but I'm just curious to know whether or not you've given up or you've just parked it for a little bit. So Alan Wake 2.
I forgot I was playing that. I'm going to have to go back to it.
Okay. I know it was only last month or so, but Cyberpunk?
I did like it when I played it last time, but I don't think I was in the right mind for it still. I wanted simplicity. I didn't mean to get about 75 hours of simplicity, but that's what I ended up with.
Fair enough.
So I've got something in my head. I think I'm going to play something else, and then I'll probably go back and finish Alan Wake, and then see what I think about Cyberpunk.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. Okay, Doug. Before we move on to your little retro corner then, so I'll talk about a game that I've completed. It was in between the two Resident Evil games. But I've had this for a little while, and I've played through it a couple of times. I've played a few hours of it on PC, and then I think I might have played it on something else. But it never really clicked with me, but I was determined to carry on with it. So, have you played Star Wars Fallen Order? Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order?
No, I own it, but have not played it.
Okie doke. So, yeah, this came out in 2019. Did pretty well. I think it sold over 10 million copies of it. It was, Respawn, so got that pedigree behind them, Titanfall, Titanfall 2, etc. Previously Activision, Call of Duty, all that sort of stuff. So, keen to see what they did with it. I played through it, and I think possibly why I stopped playing it was because I was playing it on PC, and because I was a PC wanker at the time. And I wanted it to run like butter, you know. And what I've noticed about this game, even now, I'm playing it on PlayStation 5, is that it doesn't run particularly smoothly. It does chug in places, it's a bit stuttery in places. For the most part, it's fine, but there are a few bugs I've noticed here and there, such as sort of lip syncing in some of the cutscenes.
I hate it when lipstick is in the cutscenes.
Story, whatever. I think it's something to do with stuff that happened after Revenge of the Sith.
It's a glowing review.
Whatever. It's something to do with you are one of the last Jedi, because obviously all the Jedi were killed at the end of Revenge of the Sith. So you're in hiding, you're now being hunted, and you've lost connection to the Force. So as a result, you haven't got all of your powers. So it's a Metroidvania game where you visit, I think, up to 6 different planets at different points of time. You end up going back to a lot of them, and there are sections of the planets that you cannot access until you start to level up your character and all of that. I've played through the opening of the game quite a few times, like I said, and it's a game of different games, if that makes sense. So there's a bit of Uncharted in there because there's a bit of platforming. It does that whole Uncharted thing of when you're going into a tight space, the camera really gets close to your back, and then, you know, kind of you look behind you. It's like your character's looking behind because the camera's right on top of you as you're going through
the
like
old
a really tight,
squeezing through a crevice while the game world loads in the background. Shimmy.
Yeah. All that sort of stuff. And then there's platforming and elements to it. And then it's got a bit of Dark Souls to it because you have a stamina bar when you fight and when you get attacked, and that goes down and whatever. And if you die, you then have to hit, you don't have to go back and collect your soul as such, but you have to go back and hit the enemy that killed you for you then to get your XP or your Force power, so you can, you know, level up and whatever. You have to get that back.
Does it explain that in the game? Is that canon in the story for some reason? I'd like to know what the explanation is.
Yeah, and I tuned out the story, I must admit. So it's got a bit of that. I have to say, it looks lovely. I mean, it is a really impressive looking game. The thing is, it's about 45 gig. The Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which was the sequel which came out last year, that's 140 gig, I think, or 130 gig.
Really?
So, I'm curious to see how much that's improved, because it's like nearly 3 times as big as the original. Overall, I enjoyed it, but it's not amazing. And I think the reason being because it tries to be a bit of everything, but it's not. And the combat's fine, you know, it feels good. It's got all of the Star Wars elements in it. So, you know, when you're fighting, you can block and deflect laser bolts and send them back. You know, you can slow down time. You can do all your different Force powers when you start to unlock them, whatever. But because you can't just go around murdering folk, because you're a Jedi, so you are fairly powerful. So you are fighting a lot of the time regular stormtroopers that have got batons, and then they've got electric batons, and then they introduce ones that have got like axe batons, and then they've got, you know, and then they introduce sort of slightly more powerful versions of those. So, you know, they've kind of almost shoehorned that in a little bit, because in a Star Wars film, you only ever see Jedi fighting Jedi, generally, don't you?
Yeah, because the reality is they just slice everyone else up.
Yeah, they just murder everybody. Yeah. So it's quite funny that they, you know, I suppose to kind of, I suppose, bring in this element of melee combat.
Yeah.
They've, you know, everybody is almost as powerful as you because they've got these melee weapons and stuff.
Again, the main baddie, it'd be interesting to be in their mind. Because they've heard that this Jedi is going towards them. Someone comes up to him and I don't know if it's the Emperor, but I don't know. We'll just assume it's the Emperor. Probably isn't. Emperor, he's killing all of the stormtroopers.
Give them batons.
And then like an hour later, Emperor, he's killing all the stormtroopers, the batons.
Give them all electric batons.
And then again,
give them axes.
Just gradually upgrading your own military to try and deal with one person. It's like Streets of Rage boss. You're like,
send in the henchmen with the yellow t-shirts.
Yes.
Because they're the strongest.
Yeah. So it's because it is a Metroidvania and they don't, one of the cardinal sins that they don't introduce into it is the ability to fast travel in some of these worlds. Like I said, you go back to some of the planets and you can explore a little bit further. And they do have a fairly detailed map in it. And it kind of, I suppose I haven't played Control. Again, that's another one I've played bits of. But it sounds a bit less complicated than the maps in Control. But
the maps in Control were like, complicated. Shit.
You've still got to schlep all the way from like, so A to Z and, you know, in between and whatever. And it's just like, oh, really? You know, even Dark Souls...
Are the maps in the open world or are they like in caves and stuff or is it a mix?
No, it's generally quite open.
Think then, you've got spaceships. So why can't you parachute into a level at a different point?
Yeah. Yeah,
or land at a different point rather than, I can only drop you off at the start. I can only drop you off 5 miles away from where you need to be.
Yeah, but and also, I mean, there are collectibles and things that you can find, but they're shite. I mean, it's a new poncho or a new handle for your lightsaber, which you don't see because you're holding it and you it's a third person thing. So, you know.
That's like having different coloured soles of your shoes.
Yeah. But you know what it reminded me of in the end? So that kind of became a bit tiresome. Like, you know, and there was zero motivation to go to any of the planets really afterwards and try and find some of the stuff that you haven't been able to unlock because it's a bit pointless really.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the reboot of Tomb Raider. You know, because that was a bit of a Metroidvania, wasn't it? You know, you go to a certain area, you couldn't go to all of it because you hadn't unlocked the certain ability to get to that certain point yet. So, overall, it's good. I'd give it 7 out of 10. You know, like I said, it's got good things going for it, but it wasn't great, you know. I'm looking forward to seeing what Jedi Survivor does, because apparently that is a bit better. But, So, I know you said you've got it, but have you got any great desire to play it? Probably not after what I've just said, but...
Do you know what? Weirdly, a couple of days ago, I sorted out all my discs, all my PlayStation 4 and 5 discs, because I own a lot of discs. And, dear God, when you actually do that, put them in alphabetical order and by platform as well, obviously. When you see how many games that you've got that you may have never installed... Because clearly I have bought so many things on a whim when they've had a massively heavy discount on Amazon or whatever. I think, oh, I'll get round to that, and I never have.
Right.
And when you actually physically go through them all, it's like, oh, fuck. Really need to stop buying things for about a decade, and I might get through half of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. See, I've got a few games on my wish list, like Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, God of War, Ragnarok, RoboCop, but I'm just refusing to buy any. And sometimes they'll pop up saying, oh, this is on sale, but I'm half tempted, but then I'm just going to concentrate on a lot of the games I've got installed and just get rid of them because it's ridiculous. Anyway, we've got 5 minutes.
Oh, I was going to say quickly, are you interested in that is it Star Wars Outlaws or whatever that's coming out? I know you won't be buying it, like you said, but, you know.
Not really, if I'm honest with you. I have reservations. I've not got anything massively against Ubisoft. In fact, some of their games can be quite good, but I don't know. I haven't watched the trailers for it.
Is it going to just be a Ubisoft game?
And that's the thing, see, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. So, and I think, isn't the people that did The Division and The Division 2?
You quite liked The Division 2, didn't you?
I did, but I don't know what kind of game this is going to be. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I've grown up, or maybe it's because I've just fallen out in love with Star Wars. I don't know, but I just kind of, I've not got the interest that I once had with Star Wars games.
Yeah, I think what happened with me is once I'd been in an X-Wing in VR, that kind of was all of the Star Wars game that I think I needed.
Yeah. But there you go.
It's one of them, when there's no Star Wars, like, oh, I really wish there was Star Wars. Now there's always Star Wars. It's like, I wish there wasn't as much Star Wars.
Exactly. You're right. Like I said, we've got about now 4 minutes left. So just to look forward to, I suppose, because I'll talk about this. I'll talk about the Metal Gear Master Collection next time. Like I said, I've finished Metal Gear Solid 1. I'm going to move on to Metal Gear 2 and then Snake Eater. So I'll talk about those in the next show. But there you are. Now, have you got a retro corner just for us to finish on? You got about 4 minutes.
I have, and it won't take me 4 minutes. I thought of this last time and never got round to it. I want to say how fucking much I love Turrican 2.
Ooh, yeah.
Or Turrican 2. On the Amiga? 2, hashtag the final. Hashtag. Colon the final fight. Yes, on the Amiga. Hashtag the final fight. Fuck me, yeah. I bought this at Snetterton Market for £10, and it would have been back in, when did it come out? Came out in 1991, so it probably would have been 1991. There was a very cheap computer game store there. It was real, it was like wrapped and in the box, and it wasn't pirate or anything. It was actually a real Amiga game. Amazing. But yeah. It's, I mean, omnidirectional shooter. I'll call it that because it's not a Metroidvania, but it goes in all directions. So omnidirectional scrolling shooter. Yeah, fucking love this game. The music. It's known for its music, and before the last show we recorded, I went and found the soundtrack on YouTube, and it's still fucking great. Such a fucking great soundtrack. That's 7 minutes of menu music. What game ever did a seven-minute menu epic at the time? It's crazy. Mm. But now, what made me think of this was I downloaded the Turrican Collection on PlayStation when it was in sale. Replayed through Turrican 2. It was one of the few Amiga games I was fucking excellent at. I could complete it without losing a life and end up with about 30-odd lives because I knew where all the secrets were. Even now, I haven't probably played it for a long, 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 long time. I still knew my way through it. I died a few times, but first go completed, ended up with about 17 lives.
Wow.
I just know this game. It's so weird just knowing. I couldn't remember the levels even, but then as they happened, I was like, ooh, fuck, I remember this one. There's that bit, or there's that bit of music, etc., etc., etc. Fucking love it. Always will. And to my head, it still stands up because it sounds great.
It's Chris Hulsbeck who did the music, and he's done some amazing soundtracks over the years. Apidja, I don't know if you played that.
Oh, yeah. No, but, do you know what? After I listened to Turrican 2, I went straight on and listened to the Apidja soundtrack because I remember that being cool.
Yeah, that's a bizarre game. But
it's very weird because the title screen says some Japanese writing and then 2.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What? I don't know what's going on. But yeah, there's some quality music in that as well.
Yeah. Fun little fact. So the Universal Soldier, the video game, was actually Turrican 2, but they rebranded it.
Stupid, but fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I've fond memories of Turrican 2 on the Amiga. Just like you said, an amazing. You could turn into a little wheel, couldn't you, and spin around. And
yeah, a little like Sonic the Hedgehog thing. Lay bombs. Oh fuck, we've got about 8 seconds.
Yeah, now Turrican 2 is awesome, but there you go. Right, well, yeah, I mean, like you said, those 60 minutes have just flown by. So if you want to go and listen to more podcasts that feature us and other people in the team, if you go to 60mw.co.uk, that's where all the shows are. That's the website, all the reviews, everything else. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. As always, it just flies by, doesn't it? So
it does.
Thank you to you.
Quick.
Oh, no. but we'll see you next time for another either Spotlight Reflection movie show or another speedrun show. So thanks for listening and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.